And what I want to talk tonight about is home groups, why we do home groups. Because there are some who would say, oh, home groups are clearly in the Bible. They tell you to do home groups. When Moses broke people down into groups, that was home groups. And I don't think that. They're kind of an artificial thing we do to try to accomplish something that is very biblical. And to just illustrate it, I want to refer everybody to Acts chapter 2. So after the Holy Spirit has fallen, after Peter has preached the first sermon, after thousands have believed, we get these little glimpses of the early church and sort of in its ideal form. And in Acts 2 and 42, it says this, "And they," that is the believers, "devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayers." So four things. It describes them as, and devoted just means they're constantly giving themselves to the apostles' teaching. In other words, listening to what the apostles are saying and talking about what the apostles are saying, and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread. This probably is talking about communion, and to the prayers. It's interesting that it says the prayers, but at any rate, they're worshiping together, they're discussing the apostles' teaching together, they're spending time together. They're taking communion together. So what you get in the early chapters of Acts is this picture of this vibrant community, always in one another's homes, always in one another's spaces, just really full of life together. And home groups are an attempt to make sure that we're not just seeing one another once a week, that our lives are connecting more than that. And honestly, the goal isn't for our lives to connect twice a week. The goal is for us to have our lives connect as much as possible. And that gets harder and harder, I think, with modern life. But this is the goal. It's sort of a deliberate, artificial thing we do to try to foster life together, to try to foster more community together. And in particular, to teach love. So again, going back to Jesus' Great Commission, he says that making disciples, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Now, if we just took the Sermon on the Mount by itself and looked at what the Sermon on the Mount says, I think we would probably all agree that putting into practice everything Jesus teaches in the Sermon on the Mount is a daunting task. That is not something you just do. Okay, that's going to take serious intention, serious effort. And this is where I think sometimes the church suffers from a model of education that is probably really faulty. There's a movie, many people know the movie I'm talking about, where they had this idea that if you needed to learn a skill, you could just download it into your brain. Right? I need to fly a helicopter. Push a button and suddenly this person can fly a helicopter. And I think sometimes we have that model of learning. We think that, oh, we can just download information and suddenly we'll be able to do these things we need to do. Has anybody here ever learned another language? Has anybody here ever learned another language?
I never learned it.
In facility? You could go to another country and you could get by and do that language. Has anybody here ever done it? Has anybody ever taken language classes? Okay, so there's lots of people who've taken language classes, but very few who've made the hurdle to they can speak in that foreign language. And consistently, what people that study the acquisition of a second language will tell you is immersion is essential, okay? I'm not gonna comment on how well I speak Spanish, but I lived in Mexico for a while. I listened to tapes, and then Shannon and I went and lived in Mexico for 3 months. And I will tell you, if I didn't live in Mexico, I would not have made that leap. If I wasn't immersed, if I wasn't there, where they're like, wait, they're not pronouncing it like they do on the tapes, and making all kinds of mistakes, and, you know, just constantly, I mean, you get physically tired trying to listen and speak in another language. All of those things, if all of those things weren't happening, I wouldn't have acquired whatever level of Spanish I have. I would suggest that love, which sums up all of Jesus' commands, is just as difficult to learn and requires the same kind of immersion. Does that make sense? It's not something that you can download in one sermon or two or 50 in a year. It's something that requires, I think, immersion. It requires, again, to use that phrase, life together. So to just illustrate with one point, Paul repeatedly says, Peter repeatedly says, we are to be patient. How can you be patient with somebody if you're not in rubbing elbow room with that person and coming up against their humanity that's different than your humanity and getting irritated with them and then having the opportunity to go, oh, this is what Paul was talking about. Does this make sense? I mean, we do this in our families and in our marriage, but Jesus is building this larger family. So I think that the way we have to learn love is by immersion. And it's by being in life together to the extent that we have the opportunities. I'm not saying to actually get irritated with one another, but at least the opportunity to be tempted to go down that route. Does that make sense? So, read the New Testament letters. It's people living in close proximity in some way, shape, or form, and coming up against the chance to do the opposite of love, whatever that looks like. And so for us, home groups are just a way we try to foster. We want to live life together. Let me say it another way. You should not be in church and expect it to be ideal. Right? Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Anybody ever here read Life Together? He said that when people bring their ideals of what church should be to church, they often ruin church. Because people are not ideal. And God puts you with people that are not ideal. Because you're not ideal. And this is precisely the point, that being in life together is where we learn all that teaching about love. Does that make sense? So the New Testament, you know, many people you've probably heard, and if you haven't, I would encourage you to go. Underline everywhere in the New Testament, you see the one another's. Love one another. Wait for one another. Be kind to one another. Outdo one another in showing honor. Right? The one another's are all over the place. And once again, to use this expression, the frustration that comes from body life is a feature, not a bug. Right? It is that living together where I get to see, oh, I'm not like Jesus here. And this is giving me an opportunity to say, Lord, thank you for showing me one more way I'm not like you. Would you give me some grace to be more like you towards this person in this moment? So, you know, I think that life together, like we're trying to cultivate in home groups, is part of that. A few of the things I would say about home groups. They're small. Some churches call them small groups, precisely because nobody can know 50 people well. All right, we really can't know 20 people well. All right, the idea is that in a smaller group of people, you can get to know people better. And it's my experience, how many other people experience this, that the smaller the group, the more you get to know people and the more people are willing to be known and to talk, right? So another reason we do that is church is great and it's irreplaceable. We can't stop gathering together and taking communion and hearing the word. We can't stop doing those things, but we need life together outside of that too. And that I think can only happen in smaller and smaller places. I think there's a reason Jesus only had 12 disciples. I mean, part of it is because of the symbolism, but the other part is he didn't have 50. I mean, he did, but he had these 12 guys, right? Even the Son of God could only work with that number of guys, I think, right? And there's something about our lives that are kind of structured that way. But that brings sort of the bittersweet side of home groups. If you gather with people, if you want to put Jesus' teachings into practice, if you're learning love, it will draw other people and it will grow and it'll get too big and you'll need to spin off a home group. And this is where it's an art, but living in home groups and being a part of home groups, living between the tension of getting comfortable and intimate and the tension of getting too big and you need to divide. And I compare it in some ways to being a parent. Because at some point they're gone, right? They leave. But that tension of being flexible that, all right, we're not always going to be in this configuration, but also trying to cultivate the joy that comes of really getting to know people and being intimate in a smaller group, right? And, you know, I think it's just important to keep that tension in mind that you want to cultivate life together, but when you do, it'll eventually add people and you're inevitably going to need to divide out. One last thought about home groups, and then we'll get a couple questions. The last thought is just home group leaders. I always want to make this point about home group leaders. Home group leaders are not an ordained position. It's not a special Christian achievement to be a home group leader. I would say home group leaders have one of the biggest qualities, I would say, is a willingness to do a few things. And they're not horribly difficult things. One is just willing to open your home to other people. One of the most important Christian virtues is hospitality. And we don't usually think of that, but when you consider that, I think this is one of God's most characteristic qualities is hospitality. All right, Jesus extends the hospitality of the Father and brings us into the Father's house. So one qualification of a home group leader is just willing to host. Another is willing to just coordinate a group of people who are trying to put Jesus' teachings into practice. All right, home groups, we don't think of them as just a Bible study, because Bible studies usually degenerate into debating what, just everybody sharing their opinion about what something means and never really getting on to, well, what does this mean for my life on a Monday morning? What does this mean for my marriage or my being a parent? But just a willingness to coordinate a group of people who are trying to learn to put Jesus' teachings into practice. So sort of a coordination thing. And then lastly, home group leaders, what they're not. They're not pastors. They're not teachers. They're not counselors. They're not really authorities in any sense other than the authority of, hey, we're getting together for home group and this is what we're doing. Does that make sense? I want to sort of lower the bar of what a home group leader is. And just suggest it's somebody willing to coordinate other people and host other people and connect with other people through the week. Now, clearly, people that get ordained often come out of people that are home group leaders, but it's not this grand thing that you have to achieve. It's something that I think can be basic to a lot of Christianity. All right. So, questions or comments?